Welcome everybody and thanks for listening to Tools for Life, the Tint podcast. My name is Noria van Lamoen, event organizer at Tint, and today I will be talking with Vreneli Stadelmeijer, author of the book Sure She Can, Crushed It Insecurity, and founder of coaching company She Consult. We will be sharing with you her perspective on feminism, gender inequality, and the imposter syndrome. Well, here we go! Welcome, Vreneli! Nice to have you here via this online setting. Well, as the audience might already know, I'm Noria and I'm an event organizer at Tint. But of course, the most interesting person to introduce here is you. So could you please introduce yourself for a bit?
Yes, I'm Vreneli Stadelmeijer. I studied business administration at the University of Groningen. I'm an entrepreneur for almost my whole life. Wow. I started She Consult, that's my main business, 15 years ago. And the aim of She Consult is to have more women with more pleasure and with more impact on work, because we want more women on top. We want more women in the places where the important decisions are made. So we do that with 22 branches in the Netherlands. We are the biggest one in the Netherlands, coaching and training women. And I've written two books for women. The first one is in Dutch. It's called Fuck die Onzekerheid. Fuck this insecurity. It's about the imposter syndrome. And the other book is a book especially for millennial women. It's only in Dutch, I'm sorry. It's called Een slimme meid is op de toekomst voorbereid. A smart girl is prepared for her future. Survival guide for millennial women. It's about the problems you face when you start to work.
Yeah.
And you have to work in an organization which is mainly dominated by masculine rules and by men, and how to behave. But it's also about work-life balance. It's about choosing the right partner, very important. So it's I think it's a very useful book for young women.
Yeah, wow, that's a lot of topics you hit upon.
Yeah,
already.
Yeah, we can talk hours, I think. Yes.
Yeah, since we're here with a podcast mainly for students, I was also wondering, going back to your student time, when and how did you get into feminism? Because now you're a very prominent person in the feminist world, but how did you get
there?
Yeah,
that's a good question. I think it started quite early. There is a history in my family about me, a story that when I was in the age of 6 or 7 years, I had to knit a doll.
Yeah,
the boys were going to play football at the schoolyard, and the girls had to knit a doll. But I didn't want to knit a doll. I wanted to play football too. So, well, I got angry because I thought, well, only because I'm a girl, I have to knit a doll. That's stupid.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So I was furious and I ran home. But my parents agreed with me. They said, yeah, it's crazy. Just because she's a girl, she had to do something she doesn't like.
Yeah.
That's not okay. So from that moment on, girls were allowed to choose if they want to knit a doll or do some other things with a needle or play football.
So you were already working on women's emancipation when you're 7 years old. Wow.
But the stupid thing also was that boys were not allowed to choose. Boys had to play football. But that's when I started to realize that doing female things is something worth less. And you still see it in society. You still see in society that typical female things, typical female studies, for example, are
percepted as being less worth.
Yeah,
for example,
instance,
studying at a technical university is more worthy than studying languages, for example.
Yeah, or
but
or
it's or
psychology.
Exactly. Exactly.
Becoming a teacher is a very female thing. In recent times,
And also, and I think you will recognize that at the technical university, the studies where a lot of women are studying for example, industrial design or
biomedical engineering.
They are perceived as less difficult or less worthy or
that's so confronting.
A bit less.
Yeah. Really,
and that's
confronting
really
that you say this.
Yes, and that is because there are a lot of women in it, and it even has a name, that phenomenon. It's called the Law of Sullivan. And the Law of Sullivan describes that if there are more women in a field of expertise or in a profession or something like that, the status of that field of expertise drops. Or profession drops, and even the salary drops.
Really?
Yeah, really. So you see it, for example, happen in the doctors, medical, and the medical, where you see it also in education. You see it even happening with lawyers, for example.
Yeah.
The status drops, and the income drops. Because there are more women in it.
Is that also because women work more often part-time? Or is it also that like the amount of salary you get per hour drops?
The amount of salary per hour drops.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I have never realized that.
There's nobody doing that by purpose. There's not somebody who says, oh, there are now more women in that profession, let's drop this. That's
no,
but it's what happens. It's how we think about things that women do, a profession that women have, about but you see it in every field. Women's football is less worthy than men's football. Skating, for example, the same. It's everywhere in society.
Yeah, and of course it might have its roots, most likely it has its roots in history when the men went to work and the women stayed at home. I remember my grandparents, they both had exactly the same education. They both went to university to get a degree to become a general practitioner, so a home doctor. But in my grandma's early career, they started together a practice. And in her early career, my grandma was in service of her husband, so she got paid less or hardly anything, and he got the full amount of salary.
Yeah.
And in the development of her career, that changed, but I believe she never got equal rights to her husband.
No.
Ran the practice in equal parts, completely equal to each other.
Yeah. And did it hurt her?
Yeah.
That she was paid less, yes?
Yeah, that hurt a lot. She still talks a lot about it. And
It's painful. Yeah. I can imagine. Yeah. And it's, it are your grandparents. So it's not a long time ago.
No, that's
recent
a little
history,
bit more than 50 years ago. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, exactly. I remember when I was a kid, we got a new general practitioner, home doctor, and it was a female. And then my parents discussed, "Ooh, we got a female doctor. Wow. Let's see if it's a good one." It was
really?
A discussion. It was a discussion.
They doubted her because of her.
Because she wasn't. She was a female. And then my mother. Yeah. My mother was really feministic. Said, well, of course she's good. You know, it's stupid that you even talk about this. This is a subject of discussion. Of course she's good, but it was so in their minds.
Yeah.
And nowadays nobody asks this question if you see a doctor is a female. Nobody. Well,
I even believe that most doctors are currently female.
I think so. So yeah. it changes very slowly. But you also see that the income of doctors has dropped in the last 20, 30 years.
Wow.
Because of female. Yeah, it's really confronting. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. Let's make a little bridge towards the book that you wrote, the Sure She Can Crush That Insecurity in English.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is also where you talk about the fact that things in society are not equal between male and female. And a lot of tricks, this is one of those tricks that when the profession gets female dominated, the salary drops, but there are many more things, and I was wondering if you could tell a little bit more about one of the other aspects you see in society of what happens.
Oh yeah, well, I don't know where to start. So many things. There was I don't know if you've seen it. It was a beautiful documentary on television on NPO. It's called Reference Man, and it's a series of four, and it's really good. You really have to see it. It's about how in our society the male, white male, the white man is the standard, is the norm.
Yeah.
And that everything is in everything you see that norm. It's about how the central heating is in buildings. It's the norm is the white man, and white men or men have a different body than women have, and they function very good at a temperature of 18 degrees. But for women, that's 2 degrees less. So women need 20 degrees. So women are always freezing at their office.
That's the reason why women are always cold.
Yeah, that's just because their bodies function different and they need a higher temperature.
Yeah, that's very, very interesting to bring it to the students' perspective. We have on our campus, we have the auditorium building where the biggest lecture halls are.
Yes, and
it's always freezing cold there. Yeah. So most of my female fellow students always bring a sweater or a scarf or anything.
Exactly.
As soon as you're in there, you just need to bring something extra, because otherwise it's freezing cold in there.
And the boys are okay.
They never seem to be bothered as much by it as we are. They also sometimes complain about the cold, but not as much as my
but it's a difference
students.
Of two degrees, and it's everywhere, it's in every building. So that's one example. The other example is, for example, that crash tests with cars are done with dummies. And the dummies are the average man.
Oh, those are like male copies.
Yeah, a male copy. So it's I don't know what the average man is. 1 meter 80 and 80 kilograms, whatever, something like that. But they have dummies from the average man. So they do a crash test with a male dummy. And a male dummy doesn't have breasts, doesn't have hips, more hips. So it's a different posture. So they found out that when women are hit in a car accident, they have 47% more chance of a really serious injury.
Because of this?
Yeah, almost 50% more. Now, there are a few car manufacturers who say, yeah, but we also test with female dummies. Great, you think? Yes. That's really great.
Yeah.
But what do? They do the test with the female dummy on the non-driver seat.
Oh.
So the male dummy on the driver's seat and the female dummy next to it. So, unbelievable!
Why are the stereotypes still so strong?
Yeah, well, if you see that documentary, really, if you have the chance I'm sure you can find it on internet, Reference Man, well, it's terrible. It's in all the logarithmics. It's in all, on the workplace. It's in medical science, for example. Heart diseases look totally different. The symptoms are totally different for women than they are for men. But also medicine are tested on men, not on women. Why not on women? Yeah, for it's so complicated because women have hormones and periods. And So, okay, we forget all about the hormones and we only test on women. And then we think, okay, test on men. Yeah, it should be fine. That's crazy.
It's crazy. Yeah. And yeah, it's also something to become incredibly mad about all those situations.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Incredibly mad. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it makes feminism sometimes quite controversial because you have, as you already mentioned, sometimes the standard blank male person that seems to be the wrongdoer in the system, and that seems to be the problem, and to get very mad at that. Something you sometimes see in feminism, but yeah, of course, at least in my opinion, no person is really doing something wrong.
Exactly, but I think men are not doing things wrong. It's the norm who's wrong.
Exactly.
So, but I can understand that for men it sometimes is very confronting.
Yeah.
That men feel a bit awkward. they feel maybe, I don't know, maybe a bit ashamed or something like that. I can imagine that it's not very comfortable when we are talking about this because, what can they do about it? Nothing. An individual man can do nothing about it.
No, but I can also imagine that you do not personally feel very responsible for anything.
Exactly,
know?
Exactly. Yeah. But I think it's good to know. Mm-hmm. Hey, if you are a man, a white man, I think it's good to know how privileged you are. And I think it's good to know of to have some sense about it and being aware of it. I think that's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's needed.
As we're here making a podcast mostly aimed at University of Technology in Eindhoven, most listeners might be male. What would you like to say to those listeners?
Watch the documentary Preference Man. Yeah, really. Yeah. I think it's really eye-opening.
Yeah.
Yeah, we often say men are not a part of the problem. Men are part of the solution.
So you can, that's a positive term. Yeah,
So you can help to be aware and to also be aware in your work. If you have enough eye of the female perspective, for example.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's also stressing that there's no one specifically to blame.
No.
For this situation.
No, there is not. No.
There's only the situation is here now, and that needs to change.
That needs to change. Yeah. Yes. So I think it's very good to be conscious about it and talk about it. And for women who face this on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
It's good to talk about it and to talk about how you can react on it.
Yeah.
What are the possibilities? What are the what are the words you can use? What are the systems you are in? How can you change it? How can you be effective?
Yeah.
And happy in it.
Is that also what you discuss with clients in your coaching business?
Yes, of course we do. Yeah. Of course. Well, we always say, of course, the system have to change. That's very important. The system has to change.
Yeah.
But change of systems takes a lot of time.
Absolutely.
And you can only change the system if we all work together. The government, companies, men and women.
Yeah.
But that's for the long term. Now, today, you're facing a problem on your work or in your study. Okay, let's see what's happening. Let's see what's going on. What are the patterns? And then we can say, okay, well, this is the masculine rule. The feminine rule is this one. So okay, now you know this. What are your options? What the next time it happens, what can you do? And it also helps to recognize it and to discover that it's not your fault, that you are not doing something wrong, but that it's just a masculine rule. It's just culture. For example, there is a rule that... I have to make a disclaimer. What we are talking about is not for all men and not for all women. They're all, we are generalizing a lot.
Yeah.
And of course, there is far more nuance in what we are talking about than okay. So, but the masculine rule is men tend to brag a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Men tend to brag. You also see that in the scientific world, that men tend to tell about how successful their research is and how much money they raised and whatever. So, that's not a problem. Mm-hmm. That's the rule. That's what they do. The problem is that if you do the same as a female, you are... seen as, you might be seen as arrogant, as high-hearted, as aggressive, maybe, because it doesn't fit in how we think a female should behave. So if you do that, people might not like you. Or think you're not capable of it. But if you don't do it, men think, she's a nobody. She doesn't have any success. She doesn't know important people. So that's a double bind. So it really feels uncomfortable if you are amongst men who are bragging and you are standing there and you think,
You have literally nowhere to go.
Exactly. And it's really confronting. And it's a double bind. You can't do it. If you do the one way, it's not good. And if you do the other way, it's not good either. So how do you handle it?
Mm-hmm.
That's an example of what we do in coaching.
And that makes me wonder about the classic in this case, the nature nurture discussion.
Yeah.
Is this something imposed from culture, or is it something that is entangled in our DNA and our biology?
It's entangled in our brain. So it's entangled in our we tend to be a bit too negative, and boys, men tend to be a bit too positive. But that's not a problem. If you know Well, I tend to be a bit too negative. So, okay, let's see what is real. Let's check and see if what I'm thinking is really the case, or maybe I'm a bit too negative. So if you know that from yourself, you can take action.
Yeah, and that's that thinking so negative about yourself relates quite well to the term imposter syndrome, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, the imposter syndrome is about thoughts in your head. And everybody, we know by research, everybody has those little voices in their head saying, oh, you're not good enough, you can't do it, are you up to it, are you qualified? So those voices doubting if you're good enough. And it's about the fear of being found out, that somebody else or yourself find out mm-hmm. that you're not good enough, that you can't do it, that you are a fraud, that you are capable of nothing, or you're nobody, or whatever. So, mm-hmm. So the fear of being found out causes stress, and stress causes the fight or flight reaction. And the fight reaction mm-hmm. is working very hard, 24/7. It's never good. It's never good enough. A failure is a drama because it's a proof that you can't do it. It's really tough, really, really hard work. Mm-hmm. That's the fight reaction. And the flight reaction is not doing it, running away from it. So it's, for example, not taking the job, not taking the challenge, hiding yourself, not stepping into the limelight, the spotlight, making yourself invisible.
I can imagine back in the days when I had to choose my studies, I really wanted to study applied physics. That was my dream, for sure. But I really didn't dare to live up to it because I thought, well, maybe I'm not good enough, maybe I'm not smart enough, although I had by far sufficient grades in high school.
Yeah.
It should definitely be doable, but I was really in doubt and I really had the idea, no, I should not do this. I should choose something else, something which seems more easy. But at one point I thought, no, this is such an important decision in my life. Why am I running away from what I actually want to?
Exactly.
So I stepped up to my physics teacher and I asked him, well, do you think I'm smart enough to to study applied physics? And he laughed at me and he said, well, of course you can.
Wow, great, great. Yeah, great. That's exactly a good example of how imposter thoughts can make you doubt yourself and can prevent you of doing what you really want to do. So that's a great example. Yeah.
Yeah, and I dealt with it by talking to people about it, and they took me out of my mind and into reality.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
That made me notice. Oh well, the problems aren't as big as they are in my head.
Exactly.
But what do you think is the best way to deal with those kind of fears? How do you go around with that?
Yeah. Well, I think what you did is a very good way. It starts with realizing that it's in your head. It's a voice in your head. It's a thought. And we have millions of thoughts every day, maybe every hour, I don't know. and we tend to listen more to the voices that frighten us. Because it's the signal is directly going to our amygdala. And amygdala is the oldest part in the brain. It's a reptile brain, they also call it. And the most it's a reptile brain. And the most important emotions are
coming from there. So it's fear, it's anxiety, it's but also joy. They are all in that amygdala. And then we have the stress reaction, fight or flight.
Yeah.
And then we are going to work very hard 24/7, or we just don't do it and we choose another study, in example, for your case.
Yeah.
So understanding that reaction makes it possible for us to think, oh wow, now I'm in fear. I'm having a stress reaction. Okay, my amygdala is hijacked. So, okay, time out. What am I going to do? Okay, I think it's frightening. I think it's challenging. It may be difficult. So, okay, that's okay. Something, it's not a big deal when something is difficult. You can handle it. It's not... okay. You may find it difficult, but what's the point? Then it's difficult.
Yeah, but that it's difficult doesn't necessarily mean you'll by certain
exactly. So so if you understand the mechanism of the imposter thoughts hijacking your system, your amygdala, then you can say, okay, stop. Let's rethink.
Yeah.
Okay, it might be difficult. It might be a big challenge. But hey, I got everything. I've got everything to succeed. So, well, I'm not a coward. Yeah. So let's do it.
let's go for it. Yeah. So it's I sometimes offer guided mindfulness, and there's also some of this on our podcast channel. But this is also kind of a way of mindfulness, being aware of what's going on and how that influences your feelings and emotions.
Exactly.
And,
so I always say to clients, and that's all what I also say in my book, that doing some brain training, mindfulness or meditation or yoga or something like that, helps you to be more conscious of what's happening in your brain. And then you can find the stop button, the alarm button.
Yeah.
From stop! I'm not going this way. I don't want my amygdala being hijacked. Yeah. I just want to do what I want to do in a way I want to do. So I think doing some brain training is very good. Very good. Very important.
Yeah. And in that way, you can indeed get aware of those patterns and then break through them. So you don't have to go down that rabbit hole again and again and again and again.
Yeah.
But if you're aware of this, it still might be that you're not completely confident immediately. That you said there might be something difficult, but at least I have the resources that I can make this. But what if you're completely convinced that you do not have the resources at all? How do you deal with that? How do you boost that confidence?
Ask somebody who can have an opinion on this subject. So what you did, ask your physics teacher. I think it's a good idea. Ask somebody who you trust and who knows you and rely on that verdict.
It's about getting some external feedback.
Exactly. What helps also a lot if you talk about it with friends. My daughter studied at the Technical University in Delft. And she
our rival.
And she has I don't know how the word in English, a jaarclub. I don't know.
I wouldn't know. At least I know what you mean. It's a group in a student association.
A group in a student with all females, 18 females. And they, really great. And they, all those clever girls, really great. And they help each other
But I call those voices in your head, those imposter voices, I call it parrots. Parrots on your shoulder.
Yeah.
And that helps because then you can choose if you listen to it or not. You can leave the parrot also sitting on your shoulder screaming and not listening to it. So I call it parrots on your shoulder. And that really helps them to help each other. Because if somebody is saying, oh, I don't know if I can do it, then they say, oh, I see a parrot on your shoulder. There's a big parrot on your shoulder. That helps.
That's a good one.
That helps.
Yeah.
It helps you realizing, oh, what am I talking about? Okay. Well, the parrot is always lying. It's always lying. Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's
only a very, very small hint of truth in there.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And that he makes it bigger, and or she, parrot can also be she. But there's also another thing about the imposter syndrome I want to mention is that we expect in our culture, in almost every culture in the world, we expect women to be uncertain. To be modest, to be at service to men. It's almost in so all so those imposter thoughts. I don't know how to say it, but because our culture expects from us to be uncertain.
You conform to that.
Yes, exactly. You think those thoughts are normal and those thoughts are true and that you have to listen to those thoughts.
Yeah, it might be indeed one of the reasons why women listen so much more to those voices than men.
Yeah.
Because you're stimulated to believe them.
Exactly.
And that is, again, something in the system that needs to be changed.
Exactly. So that's why I think it's so important that we women support each other. And that we women also support each other to talk about our successes. And to talk about the things we like to do. And support each other, and it's very important to have I always say a fan club, to have a fan club of women who are happy and joyed when you have a success, if they are as a bunch of cheerleaders standing
team
of cheerleaders. Yeah. Hey, great, good job.
Well, but that is something I think we can take into a more general perspective, because I think in general that if you're proud of something you achieved and you tell that to others, people immediately experience you as if you're bragging.
Exactly.
And they also kind of experience it as a threat.
Exactly.
Like, I am now very explicitly telling you that I am better than you are, and that's a threat. Well, I noticed it in myself quite some time ago, and then I thought, but nobody's threatening me. There's no problem that somebody is better at something than I am. That's great.
Fantastic.
You know, that brings society further. If everybody is just performing incredibly well, that's nice. And everybody has their talents. And
exactly.
That's, I loved it and I would like to cheer for that. So from that moment, whenever somebody dared to speak up to say something like, oh, I did this and I got a high grade, or I'm very proud of what I made, I'm their personal cheerleader saying,
very good.
How are you going to celebrate this?
Very important.
I noticed that although I'm stepping in that role for others, I find it very hard myself. To say such things.
Yeah.
I have achieved things in my career so far at university and at high school that I'm incredibly proud of. But I've had so many reactions when I said that, that people, as a defensive way started threatening me, like, oh, shut up, you're annoying.
Painful, huh? It's painful.
That's really painful, That really got deep into my system, and I do not really dare to sometimes I force myself, but it doesn't really feel comfortable to do so.
Yeah. So that's so it's important to have a bunch of cheerleaders who help you with this.
Yeah, I think I should write a vacancy that whenever you want to be a cheerleader for me, I will also be a cheerleader
exactly,
for you.
Exactly.
But I need also my personal cheerleader.
Of course. Yes. Yeah. So I think it's really important that you surround yourself with a bunch of cheerleaders. Yeah, it's really important. Don't seek too much contact with women and men who are not.
Yeah.
So it's important. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're talking about cheerleaders, they are of course cheering you up from below, like, well, you're so doing so great. But sometimes you also have something above you that you like to strive for, a role model, someone you look up to and say, wow, if only I could do the same as this person did. And what we saw in the celebration of women in science of last year, the theme was then role models, and we talked a lot about role models. And what we saw is that although quite some women that were there had earned a very good position in the academic world, they're doing incredibly well in their tenure track, they're performing at their best and they could serve as a role model, but they just do not feel like it. That also relates a lot to imposter syndrome. Zeker. I think they just think that's how it is, and they just do their job while they achieve enormously great things which other people could look up
to. Yeah, you're right. I think that's also the imposter syndrome. What I'm doing is not so good, and it's not not for so special, and everybody can do this. Huh? Those are the really imposter thoughts. It's also about being afraid of stepping into the limelight, in the spotlight, to showcase yourself. But I really think it's very important for women to do so, and I even think that you as a woman are obliged to do so. Whatever you achieved, whatever your age is, I think you can be a role model for girls who are just getting from high school.
Could be,
or maybe even students who have your age and are on the same level. You do things in another way, so you can be a role model for them as well. So I think we women should be more conscious about how important it is to be a role model, and that being a role model can change the world. If we do so,
it's an honorable role to take on,
exactly.
And to inspire other people.
Exactly.
But if you're not really confident with doing this, what would you advise such a lady in the tenure track, or for instance me? What would you advise us to do if you're at least now aware that it is important, but you do not really feel like it yet?
Yeah, you have to get some courage to do it somewhere. Yeah. Maybe the problem is that it feels selfish.
Yeah.
It feels selfish to be a role model or to act as a role model. But it is not selfish. It's for the sake of others. It's for the sake of other women. It's for sake of the organizations we work in, is for sake of the world, you can say. So you acting as a role model brings us closer to a better world. So it's absolutely not selfish.
Well, I will take that with me, definitely. And then, of course, I think you are a role model for quite some people that follow you. But do you also have a role model yourself?
Oh, yes, I have a lot of different role models. For example, Linda de Mol is a role model for me because I think she has a very strong inner voice. And if she wants to do something, if she wants to play in a movie, or if she wants to start a magazine, and everybody says, oh, that's a bad idea, you shouldn't do that, she does. And it becomes a success. Great, I think. So she has an enormous drive. And I also admire her because she surrounds herself with good people. A team of people who are good in the things she's not good at, and she knows it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's great if you can do that. So Linda de Mol is for me a role model, but not in every aspect. A role model is not a saint, eh? It's not somebody who's perfect, but she's for me a role model in those particular areas. I have a lot of role models. I think Jacinda Ardern, the Prime Minister of New Zealand, is a role model. Yeah. I think for every young mother, for example. Although I don't agree with a lot of things she does, but I think in that way she is really a good role model. Oprah Winfrey, I think, is great.
Yeah, and so you can have many role models for many aspects of life. Yeah, great.
Yeah.
I would like to ask you, for me and for all the other students here at the university in Eindhoven, what would be your strongest advice for us, for me as a female, for the male students? How do we make that societal change, as we discussed earlier? What would be your strongest advice to go into that direction?
Yeah, I think my advice would be aware of the patterns. Be aware of the patterns of the norm of the white male. Don't think that you are stupid, that it's your problem, that it's your fault, but find a way to solve it.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you very much in general for this whole conversation. It was nice to meet you.
Yeah, it was nice to meet you too, yes.
It was a great conversation. I learned a lot. And lastly, could you let our listeners know where they can find out more about you?
Yeah, well, go to the website sheconsult.nl and you'll find everything you want to know, I hope. And otherwise, you can mail for more information. Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Tools for Life, the TIN podcast. You can find out more about Vreneli and her company on her website, sheconsult.nl. And you can order her book at any bookstore. If you like this episode, don't forget to subscribe to the TINT podcast and find out more information about what TINT is up to on our website, tint-eindhoven.nl, or by following us on Facebook and Instagram. All info shared can be found in the show notes. My name is Noria van Lamoen, and I'm looking forward to having you with us again for the next episode.